This is the Faherty Podcast presented by Farmers Insurance.
Greetings, Earthlings. We're back with another episode of Faherty Up Close at a Distance. And my guest is one of the most familiar faces in college basketball. He's a legend in the broadcasting industry when it comes to that. Jay Billis, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, David. Great to be with you.
How are things going here with the social distancing? What height are you? You're about 6'9", 6'8", something like that?
Yeah, I'm about 6'8", and the social distancing has been difficult, but we're getting through it. Normally, I'd be working now. I'd be at a basketball game or in the studio talking about a basketball game. So yeah. I think my pets and my family are looking at me right now going, what are you doing here? You shouldn't be here.
Me too, but I was thinking at 6'8", you're already farther away from people than most. Yeah, so that works. You've been nominated for 5 Emmys, so that's one thing that you and I have in common. Neither of us actually has an Emmy.
Yeah, I'm a 5-time loser, and looking forward to maybe being a 6-time loser sometime in the future.
I know exactly the feeling. Take me back to high school just for a moment here. You were one of the top 40 players in the country, and you ended up being an attorney. How does that work?
When you couldn't maintain your status as one of the top 40 players, when players got better than you or they were just flat out better. I was lucky, David. I grew up in Los Angeles, and you know, my parents were very much advocates of me being a versatile person and having more than one thing to do. So they encouraged me to be good at anything. But when I turned out to be pretty decent at basketball, they were saying, you're not just a basketball player. You need to concentrate on other things. And so my dad really kind of talked me into going to law school and said that, look, you don't have the great thing about going to law school is you don't have to be a lawyer, but you'll be able to handle your own affairs. Is a great degree to have. And it certainly made me better. I was pretty good at arguing before, but it made me better.
Well, I mean, you've done a bunch of things. You know, there's TV, there's movies, you're an attorney, you've called college games, you know, forever now. What's your favorite thing to do?
Honestly, my favorite thing to do at my age is play golf.
Really?
I really enjoy it. Yeah, it is. I mean, I enjoy my job. I love it. It's not work to me. Basketball is not work. I spend a ton of time watching film and watching teams play in the gym, in meetings with coaches. It's all fantastic. But, you know, it just any given day, if it's nice outside, if somebody said, what would you want to do first? I'd want to go out and play golf. I'd want to go hit balls or hang out with my friends and play. I'll tell you what, though, David. Basketball and golf are very similar in a lot of ways. First of all, you can be pretty decent at both and look like you're not. And one thing that I learned as a basketball player, I used to go to the gym to play and maybe play pickup or something. And I would see some guys, maybe they were bankers or lawyers, playing at lunch. And they were awful. And I couldn't understand, like, how could somebody that's so bad at this love it so much and they wanted to play all the time? And I didn't really get it until I started playing golf. Then yeah. I got it. And then you realize, look, I'm no good at golf, but man, I love it. And I didn't understand sort of the basketball thing about people who love to play that weren't any good at until I started playing golf.
Yeah, it's like sex. You don't have to be any good at it to enjoy it. Now, you've been an outspoken announcer, if you like. You know, sometimes you've been critical of the NCAA, sometimes you've been very complimentary. How are they handling this COVID-19 outbreak, in your opinion?
Overall, David, really well. I think it exposed some structural difficulties that the NCAA has about being able to coordinate a decision and communicate it. But they got all the broad strokes right. And so all the things about, well, they should have told this conference and they should have shared information, all that, those are all secondary. They got the cancellation of the tournament right. And I think the way they've handled things since then has been exemplary. And overall, they've done a very good job.
How do you think it's going to affect the college game going forwards?
I think in the long run, everything will be fine. And we won't see that much change. We may see some change in the way the game is structured on the NCAA level. I think that it's exposed some things that could be changed. The finances are gonna take a hit, and you're gonna see some very difficult times and decisions to be made. But that's true, I believe, of any business. So I really believe this. I'm very optimistic that this will be a V-shaped recovery, and we'll get through all this. But hopefully we can use it in every walk and say, okay, well, if we do have to make changes, what are the smart changes that we could make in the aftermath of all of this?
Well, one of the changes that you've been a proponent of is, you know, you feel that the athletes should be compensated for their efforts. I've never really been able to understand how a college, whether it's football or basketball, you know, the two main sports, can make so much money, extraordinary amounts of money off these kids, and yet they don't receive anything for it themselves. How would you structure such a thing?
Well, how would I structure changing it? It would be very simple. I would just take away the amateurism restrictions that are on players and let the free market work. I don't think it would really be that difficult. And as you know, David, right now, the only class of person in the industry that is restricted in any way in what they can earn or accept is the athlete. And no student is told what they can earn or accept. So if you're a music student, you can go out and cut a record or sell a song or perform in public for as much money as you can earn. People can give you money. There's no restriction on it. And this amateurism restriction that the NCAA uses is really an old vestige that has never really made any sense, especially in a commercial enterprise. And I happen to believe that the only real amateur sport in America right now is amateur golf. But I think we'd see a little pushback if the U.S. amateur generated $1 billion in a given year. I think some of the players would say, you know what, you know, maybe we should be allowed to benefit off that.
Yeah, well, and you should have to wear long pants to earn money playing golf. If you want to be taken seriously, wear long pants. Honestly, I don't see it.
There's no way that long pants should be a requirement unless you are so unattractive in shorts that it's a public safety issue.
Yeah, there is that. Now, you started calling college games for, what, $200 a game?
Yeah, I started doing games on radio. I was practicing law in Charlotte and got a call to do radio games. And I think I made about $200 a game plus expenses. So basically my gas money or whatever it took me to hop on a plane and get to a game.
And talking about practicing law in Charlotte, I actually know a couple of your partners, the likes of Jim Hovis and John Chenundit, both of whom can chew me, by the way. I've known them for a long time. Were you an offensive or a defensive lawyer?
I was both. So I was a commercial litigator. So essentially, I think you would call me a trial lawyer. And I did work for clients when they were plaintiffs and suing somebody. And then I did work for clients when they were a defendant in a case. So I had experience on sort of both sides of the fence there. And I also did a little bit of pro bono criminal work where I loaned myself out to the public defender's office. And so that was an experience, too.
Yeah. Speaking of experiences, you once defended a company that was making knockoff Barney the Dinosaur costumes. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I object to the term knockoff. They might have had similarities. But yeah, I represented a costume manufacturer named Philip Morris, who billed himself as the Colonel Sanders of the costume industry. Right. And a great guy. And he had some costumes that he was manufacturing and selling that looked a little bit too much like Barney for the owners of Barney's liking. And trademark copyright, they have to do these things. They have to basically sweep the country and protect their trademark and copyright. But they wouldn't let him settle. And so we wound up going to trial and argued the case in federal court. And I actually subpoenaed Barney to the trial. And and the judge made Barney show up to the trial.
I love you. You love me. Yes. As an attorney, you know, if you're interviewing someone, say a basketball coach or a player, do you do it as if you were an attorney? You know the answer before you ask the question?
I try to think that way. I think being a lawyer really helped me with trying to craft a question that would elicit a certain response or take you down a certain road. But hopefully what my law career helped me with most is when I do ask a question, listening to the answer. Because I think in a lot of times you're so worried about, well, what am I going to ask next? You're not listening to the answer, and the answer will tell you what direction to go. So, you know, you try as best you can, and I'm sure you do the same thing, to have maybe an outline or a plan, but the plan can go out the window based upon where the conversation takes you.
Right. out the window with rapid fire here. Let's start with, should Dick Vitale be in a Viagra commercial?
Yes, and if you don't like Vitale, you don't know Dick.
Yeah, I love him and I've never met him. If you hadn't had gone to Duke, you would have gone to?
I probably would have gone to Syracuse or Iowa. Jim Boeheim and Lute Olson, who was at Iowa at the time, recruited me really hard. So one of those two places.
Now, your son went to Wake Forest, right?
He did. He played basketball for Danny Manning at Wake Forest, just graduated last season.
Is that not treasonous?
No, I mean, we were really happy. My wife went to Wake Forest Business School, so we had Wake in the family, but he loved it. I mean, we were just glad that we got him off the street.
Best basketball moment you saw in person?
Christian Laettner's shot against Kentucky in 1992. I was an assistant basketball coach, a grad assistant at Duke at the time, so I was actually sitting there on the bench when he made that shot.
I'm from Northern Ireland. Even I remember that. Roughly how many pairs of sneakers do you own?
About 100, I'd say.
Yeah, the same as my vests. three words to describe Coach K.
Brilliant, normal, and funny. Because he a lot of people don't think, it might see him a certain way in a basketball game, but he's really, really funny. And he's just a normal guy when you sit down with him and you're hanging out with him. He's a normal guy with extraordinary ability.
Three words to describe Wendy Billis.
Patient, blind, and understanding.
I love that. What's your favorite golf course to play?
Pine Valley Golf Club in New Jersey.
Well, if you have to, you know, you might as well play Pine Valley. Yeah. What course are you dying to play?
What course am I dying to play? I've never played Sandhills in Nebraska and would love to play there. God, there's so many that I would love to play. And I've never played Pebble Beach. I would love to play Pebble.
All right. Who do you think would have won this year's tournament?
I think Kansas would have won, but it's kind of like saying who would have won the Masters. You have an idea of as who would have been favored, but they could play it 10 times and it might be 10 different winners. But Kansas was the best team entering the tournament.
That's what Gary Woodland told me as well. Yeah. Can you spell, hang on 1 minute. I mean, I know that you say it's Krzyzewski, but it's not. I mean, my family doesn't know how to pronounce my name, all right? They pronounce it Fearty, you know, which is clearly not right. I mean, can you spell Krzyzewski?
I can, but it's almost an unfair thing because that was required when we got a scholarship. It's Krzyzewski. But I'd just go with the one letter and just say K.
You are correct. Is it true you were once in an action movie in which your head exploded in the back of a police car?
Yes, I was in a movie with Dolph Lundgren and Brian Benben called I Come in Peace. It was originally called Dark Angel, but I think the movie Dark Man came out that summer, so the title was changed. And I had a death scene in the back of a police car, which was better than the death scene in Camille. I mean, it was just spectacular and Oscar-worthy. I got screwed out of the Oscar in addition to all those Emmys.
Nice work. I'll tell you, thank you so much for joining me, Jay. And stay safe in these strange times.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining me, Faherty fans. You can find more of the Faherty podcast presented by Farmers Insurance on Faherty.com and your favorite podcast provider. Go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Art19, or Google Play. Search Faherty and subscribe. If you love the show, and why wouldn't you? Be sure to leave a rating, review, and tell your friends.